The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com. It is Conspiracy Theory Thursday. Great time for you to, if you want to get even a little more out there on the edge, go ahead, 770-5633 to join in, 770-KMED. And my email, Bill, at BillMyersShow.com. And recently out in front of the U.S. District Court in Medford, they had a little get-together.
Deep in the woods of North Carolina, an extremist eco-group called Earth First bewails the violation of American nature.
I want to mourn the loss of all the old growth trees I've seen and tell them that we love them and that we don't want them to die. That there are some people here who do care. So I want you to know that, trees.
And yes, similar type of individuals, maybe a little less dramatic, but nevertheless, certainly fervently supporter of the trees and wanting to make sure that they know that we love them. They were standing outside the courthouse the other day. 35 logging opponents demonstrating with signs outside. Forest defense equals climate defense. We speak for the trees. Protect old growth trees on federal lands. Executive Order 14072 from Biden. Stop late loggers. Yeah, and needless to say, this is what we're looking at again here. And the BLM, of course, is looking to do some logging near Williams. And this is what this is all about. And so about 1:30 Tuesday, this is from a Rogue Valley Times story, attorneys for KS Wild and other conservation groups prepared for a 2 p.m. hearing outside. They're also preparing attorneys for the U.S. government and timber trade groups here. Both sides are asking the U.S. Magistrate Judge Mark Clark to rule in their favor after more than 2 hours. Clark took matters into consideration. The whole idea is to protect old growth, BLM attorney Alexis Romero told Clark, a 16-year veteran of the bench. The court understands the need for prompt forest management, Clark said during the opening remarks. I'm certainly not an expert in environmental cases, but I've been around a while. Clark pointedly asked why the government wants to log old growth trees. Where is that authorized, he asked. The reply was buried in an avalanche of legal arguments from both sides. Multiple attorneys spoke for each side. The arguments were pro and con regarding a BLM forest fuels treatment known as integrated vegetation management. It calls for logging, thinning, and road building across the agency's Medford district, which takes in Jackson and Josephine County. So this is for both our counties, which makes this a big deal. But of course, what's going on with the anti-logging folks is that there's never any reason ever to cut a tree down. And yet these same people are the types like Luke Rudiger that go out to public meetings in the Applegate a number of years ago. It says, I love the smell of wildfire in the summer because I know the forest is being restored. So they're the ones that want everything to be burned. If you are to physically remove trees, that's always bad. If Mother Nature removes them by burning, that is good. That's restoring. So, needless to say, they're not nearly as dramatic as the tape I played there from Georgia a number of years ago. I think it was from some documentary. It's just kind of bizarre, just really bizarre. But that the same attitude is still kind of works. It's like the same people that are walking around saying we want renewable energy and we want nothing but wind and solar, but wait a minute, you're covering all the landscape. Okay, well, you can't have both. Well, what about the tortoise out here in the desert? What do you want? Do you want your iPhone to work or not? But that's 5G. Oh, that's a different story. That's over in Ashland. I guess apparently the Ashland City Council voted for their 5G ordinance and everyone not unhappy there. You know, speaking of that story, I had an email from Mark, who actually came around to, I think he finally got it, because I've been trying to tell people who have been upset about the 5G invasion of Southwest Oregon, and they're concerned that cities don't seem to really be able to do much about it. And I was try to make it clear to everybody that they really can't, the way that the regulations have been discussed. In fact, let me share an email I got from Mark the other day. It says, Bill, I have researched it, and you are correct. The federal courts are the only place where a victory has been taken against anything when it comes with 5G. Interestingly enough, in D.C., the regulations were found arbitrary by the courts and remanded. Fundamentally, the core issue differs from the Portland versus FCC case, which Ashland and Medford rely on for their approvals. The case in Washington, D.C. highlighted that the FCC failed to account for public input when upholding the 1996 regulations and was instructed to justify this decision. Despite over 2 years passing, the FCC has not provided an explanation. Individuals close to the litigation have shared with me that the Environmental Health Trust is gearing up to initiate another lawsuit due to the FCC's inaction. In my view, Medford and Ashland are enforcing regulations that disregard public input, leading to their classification as arbitrary. Notably, both cities continue to overlook public feedback, a trend reminiscent of the past few years. All right, Mark. Yeah, I'm glad you kind of saw it this way. I was trying to tell people that this concept that all you can do, that how you can have influence here is just to yell at your city councils. Your city councils, though, ultimately are still not going to have jurisdiction on federally licensed facilities. That's just the fact of the matter. And maybe you're not willing to, you know, believe me on that, but the research is pretty clear on that. Nobody has anything to say about the broadcast facilities that I'm even involved with on KMED and all of our other stations here. Broadcast facilities are regulated almost expressly, exclusively by the federal government, and frankly, so is 5G. I think ultimately the other aspect of folks who are against the 5G and other technology coming in is that the vast majority of people, remember, we're always talking about democracy, right? Democracy, which means the majority wins. Majority, one vote more than 50% means that you get to crush the opposition. You know, most of them want their cell phone and they want their internet. They want their broadband internet. They're not looking at it as the Internet of Things or the other Conspiracy Theory Thursday stuff that we'll talk about. They want it all to work. They want it all to work. The companies are out there selling these services and people are buying them. And ultimately, I think that that is the winner, in spite of where you might not like it to be cited. I must say, putting 5G on the college campus does seem to be a rather odd place to put it. Maybe we can have that conversation another time. But still, just going to your city council is not going to stop that. It is a much higher up level fight. And a lot of folks don't like that. I get that. But that is the system that we are living under right now, with an overweening regulatory state that pretty much says that you local people have nothing to do with anything. And you're just going to hop to our state thing. Which kind of gets me back to this scab I'm going to continue to pick with you, in which how even our counties are defined first and foremost as agencies of the state. The state agency is the number one thing we're supposed to dance to. And most of the rural counties were fooled into changing their charters back in the 1970s for some reason. This must have been due to the passage of Senate Bill 100, you know, state land use control. And how could they really get this control in? Well, making the counties totally subservient to the state of Oregon and its land control and its people control agenda. That's really what I think was going on with this. Mr. X and I have talked about that off and on over the years here on how the county charters are important. But notice how our Democratic friends, and I put friends in scary air quotes, they're trying to change the charter, but they're not trying to change the charters in Jackson and Josephine County for better. They're actually trying to change it to increase and make it worse here in Southwest Oregon. So remember, this is just a little takeaway. 17-116, solid no in Joe County. The three charter change measures in Jackson County, absolutely shoot each and every one of them down. They're only wanted for one reason, by Democrats that want to get more Democrats and more state control, and arguably more state control. They don't like having counties. They don't like living in counties that are not necessarily a total laydown for state power and state agency power. If there was any change we were going to do to our Jackson and Josephine County charters, it would be to change the charter to redefine us to be more like Multnomah County. Multnomah County is defined first and foremost as the body politic. In other words, it is we, the people, first. And I can't help but think that even in this battle over 5G in Ashland, you would think that a few LED bulbs would go off over the heads of people that are saying, hey, maybe that's what we should be focusing on, strengthening our counties rather than, you know, hoping that our city council is going to save everything. You know, our volunteer city councils. God bless them, but, you know, it's not really up to these kind of fights. You need bigger dogs in your fight, so to speak, here. Yeah, Multnomah County is defined first and foremost as a body politic. So we the people count first in Multnomah County. Actually, quite a bit more control in Multnomah County over state agency power than we have in Jackson and Josephine County. Both Jackson and Josephine County are defined first and foremost as agency of the state. And I'll remind you that in legal arguments and in legal definitions, whatever's number one is most important, whatever's next is second, and what's third. And Jackson County, if I recall correctly, is defined first and foremost, same with Josephine County, agency of the state, body politic, and a corporate. Yeah, and a corporate. Yeah, those are the three legal definitions, I believe. I'll look it up here in just a minute during the break, perhaps. But I do recall that's what it is. So agency of the state. So Oregon Health Authority comes in here and says, you shall do this. And, you know, first and foremost, the county is supposed to be going, aye. We want you to deliver a pile of excrement. What color would you like it, Oregon Health Authority? It's white. Well, we will do this. We are an agency of the state first. Which means the body politic, we the people, have to work a lot harder to have half as much influence as over in Multnomah County. Those are the kind of changes we need to make to our charter. Not coming up with, not hiring two more county commissioners and going to districts, which is what, the Democratic clowns wish to do here in Southwest Oregon. That's what they're trying to do both in Jackson and Josephine County, both of them. They're going to the districts right away in Josephine County if the voters stupidly go for that measure up there, which I hope you don't. I hope you're telling your friends about, not to do this. And in Jackson County, going to districts is something that they have admitted openly in their public meetings of supporting this, that, yeah, that's where they want to go next. So they fool you into getting, getting five commissioners. That means you'll have, two more democracies. Two more democracy because everything's about our democracy, meaning the Democratic Party democracy version. So I know there's a lot going on there between the timber and then the 5G and then the battle for the control and strength of the counties. But it is all kind of connected in a strange way on Conspiracy Theory Thursday. This is the Bill Meyer Show, 25 minutes after 6. Join in, 770-5633. By the way, going to talk about a report here in the next few minutes. I have a guest coming on from Americans for Prosperity. They've put out a very interesting report saying that just about everything our government did to respond to COVID, about everything it did was wrong. Everything was wrong. And they've got the data to back it up. Now, I think many of us listening right now, maybe you're listening, understand that. But it's great to actually see it in black and white. But, of course, they're still moving forward as if nothing has changed. Did you find that interesting? But anyway, we'll talk about that coming up here in the next few minutes. Also going to talk with Jackson County Commissioner Colleen Roberts, who is on the road at the AFRC conference. And I'd like to find out, because I had talked to one of the people from the AFRC, American Forest Research, American Forest Resource Council or Committee, whatever it is. But anyway, it's a timber group out there, and it's something that I was kind of wondering about how the reaction has been given that the Supreme Court decided not to take on the Obama situation with the expansion of the Cascade Siskiyou Monument, even though the ONC Act says that all of this timberland that was deeded to control under the ONC Act to the counties was supposed to be, you're supposed to be selling timber off of these lands, and a lot of the money ends up going for the county, so that the people are able to live better here in Jackson and Josephine County. But the Supreme Court chose not to pick that up. And maybe we'll talk about what's next in that particular battle. Yeah, the ONC Act from 1937, Act of Congress, But everyone's acting as if it doesn't exist any longer. Well, you know, that's an old act, and you know, we don't want to do that because you know, besides, we're all controlled. We have nothing but gangrene people within the federal agencies now, and we say that the monument grows, and that we'll destroy the dams then too under Green Agenda, so we don't have water to fight the fires. But then we'll have lots of money coming in from the feds, and we'll hire collaboratives to burn the forest. Okay. And if your head spins, I understand. This is the Bill Myers Show on KMED KCMD. We'll talk with Colleen around 7:30. With so many working and doing business from home, it's good to know there's a community business center to help. A Street Print and Parcel is a one-stop shop for everything from large format printing and scanning to blueprints, architectural plans, and shipping. Their Studio 10 expansion offers passport photos, photo mounting, fine art scanning, art reproductions, signs and banners, negative and slide scanning, canvas prints, and so much more. Located in Ashland on A Street across from Ashland Hardware. Their motto, we create it, print it, pack it, and ship it. A Street Print and Parcel and Studio 10.
Fraudulent tax returns due to identity theft increased by 30% in 2023. If you're in a bind this tax season, LifeLock can help. Their U.S.-based restoration specialist are dedicated to helping solve identity theft issues, and all plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, which means if you lose money because of identity theft, LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan. Help protect your information with LifeLock. Go to LifeLock.com and save up to 25% your first year with my name, Clay, as your promo code.
The reports keep coming about Sky Park Insurance saving listeners money. Here's Dan in Medford.
I've been hearing Bill talk about Sky Park on the radio, and now I wished I'd called Steve earlier. He cut my insurance in half on my truck and saved me $600 a year. About blew my boots off.
Sky Park Insurance is an independent insurance company that shops for the best rates among several name brand companies. Call Steve at 261-5444.
At Sky Park, we make insurance easy.
Saving big, I can dig on just the things I need.
Oregon E-Deals has saved the Rogue Valley truckloads of money over the years on things you buy and use often. All Beauty Mark Salon certificates are half off. Also, save big on Diner 62, Malello's Coffee, and Freddy's Diner. This and much more available exclusively at OregonEDeals.com.
I'm hooked on OregonEDeals.com. I'm saving big.
Hi, I'm Steve Potter, body shop manager of Lithia Body and Paint, and I'm on 106.7 KMED.
629, let me go to Mr. X. Hello, Mr. X. You were mentioning that when I talked about the legal definitions of Jackson and Joseph E. County, I did get that right, that it's agency of the state first, right? Then body politic.
You are exactly right, Bill. And the only thing that you could leave out, since it's Conspiracy Theory Thursday, go to the true nature of the real conspiracy that actually manifested itself in a progression towards it, was how this was all implemented many years ago and done in support of SB 100 that you talk about so frequently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Senate Bill 100, by the way, for those who don't know, is state land use planning. And we're the only state in the entire country that does this. We're the only one foolish enough to go down this road.
Well, is foolish... It doesn't even describe it, Bill, because the influences that we're even considering right now of trying to change our county charter goes down to the support of, literally, there was an attempt, and I heard a lot about it a few weeks ago, but one of our senators here locally was trying to bring in a $30 million package for forest restoration, and now you look at this, these people have the audacity to go down and talk about you can't manage the forest. They protest it, but yet if it was to be burnt, it'd be fine. And this is the nature. They don't understand what this means. And I look at this, and it all comes back to the county being strong. And this is the big attack. The big attack against our county, the big attack on every level that we have to consider is the mechanisms that have already been put in place. And if we give away more of our protections within that body politic, that's what we've got to sit down and say no to. We've got to vote all the time against that type of intrusion. I hope that makes sense.
Yes, it does make sense. By the way, there is a PAC that is going out to go against these ballot measures, all of three of these ballot measures. In fact, you can find out more about it. It's pretty simple. You just go to stopbiggergovernment.com, stopbiggergovernment.com. I haven't seen any signs or any activity from them yet, and I'm going to try to get them on and see if we can have a little talk about it. But there is work that is being done right now to fight this. And to me, though, you know, in spite of what this PAC may do, we the people need to be sharing this among ourselves with one another, with our family, our friends, yep. and just say, stop, no. You just have to say no to this. And you also can't help but look, you have to consider the source of who is bringing this forward. Failed, that's mostly right. Democrat county commission candidates. They have not been able to get a lot of traction in Jackson and Josephine County because the majority of the voters are not in tune with their radical proposals. And this is why they've tended to reject them at the ballot box. And so because they've been rejected at the ballot box, they want to change the rules. That's what this is all about. It's about weakening the county, ultimately.
Well, that is, Bill, I don't even know what else to say. You said it correctly in ways that are just so eloquent. But yeah. The reality, we've got to talk amongst one another.
Yeah.
We've got to bring about the power of that body politic. And start being, you know, understanding. Anybody who's lived here a while, go back to 2017, 2018, in those years, how much smoke we had for a duration of the summer, and understand that it was our county commission, our county charter, that allowed everything to progress where we could literally stop that intrusion from happening. And we have to
look at what, and by the way, Ed, you're right about this, because the county commission ended up entering into coordination with the local agencies to put the fires out in the summertime during fire season. And
yeah.
and our county comes under fire by the same progressive groups that are trying to push the charter changes both in Jackson and Josephine County, because they want to burn prescribed burns all year round, even in fire season. They want to do it. And, you know, this is nonsense that these people are preaching, and they want to take over the counties, the county government, in order to do that.
Well, just remember their mantra in all of this, Bill, is restoration of our force to pre-white settlement conditions. Well, I'm going to remind them all, it's been settled. We have to live here while they're restoring it to pre-white settlement conditions, which weren't actually the conditions of pre-white settlement. You know, this is the absurdity of the argument. It's a mantra. It's a false pathway that they've taken into this. And make no mistake, this is a grand conspiracy on many levels, because it's a scheme. And it's a scheme that manifests itself in the news around you every day, because all year, last year, what was it, the big fires in Canada, doing smoke intrusions upon New York City, Chicago, all of these things, every aspect of this. And Jackson and Josephine County have to understand right now is the time for you to talk to your neighbor, talk some sense into your neighbor, talk some sense into people, and understand, I don't care if you lived in Ashland, if you're a raving Democrat, you got to sit down and understand that these people are working against you, because a huge amount of the smoke impacts were in Ashland. You go back and understand all of this, and the reality is you are listening to people, and they're pushing something, and they're lying on every level about this. Like it's some kind of big, we got to go after those commissioners. Well, that, as you call
those commissioners kept your skies much more smoke-free than other areas because of their policy.
Well, and our commission is involved in literally trying to stop this, because if you go back year by year, they stopped burning here. So what did they do? They burnt Canada. Oregon State University is one of the prime influencers of the Canadian wildfire policy. And in Australia the year before. And it turned out it's a pact between the United States, Canada, and Australia.
Yeah, look it up there, Ed. I appreciate the call on that. I don't have time to get. We'll have to revisit this a little later. But I think you also very eloquently made your point. Okay, thanks for the call.
Thank you, Bill.
All right. Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's all connected. We have the people standing out in front of the courthouse saying, no, we don't want you doing anything about it. And also, by the way, they were saying, oh, yeah, the BLM's always trying to do things because they're always talking about wildfire. Okay. Yeah, I know the old growth tree. The old growth tree will withstand everything. Okay, 637. Anyway, we'll set that aside here at the moment here. KMED, KCMD, let's catch up on the rest of the news now. News sponsored by Caveman Heating and Air. It's the climate and we control it. Call Caveman Heating and Air at 541-476-0009 or cavemanheating.com.
Good morning. I'm Marcus Veal with your MC5 Morning News Update. A woman was arrested for allegedly starting a fire at a home in West Medford Tuesday. MFD Fire Chief Eric Thompson says the call came in Tuesday afternoon about a fire on the porch of the home on Narragan Street. He says from there, flames rapidly extended into the attic and main portion of the home. Medford PD said Wednesday that 31-year-old Candace Hastings started the fire on the porch. MPD Lieutenant Don Lane says eyewitnesses helped them find and arrest Hastings. Police also tell us that two guinea pigs died in the flames, but the two residents were unhurt. Hastings is now charged with arson, animal abuse, reckless burning, and resisting arrest. Medford Fire said the home is a total loss. With Oregon's primary elections coming up next month, there are a few dates to keep in mind as we approach the election. The state will begin to mail out ballots on April 22nd. April 30th is the last day to register to vote or change party affiliations. By May 1st, you should have your voter's pamphlet with information on all the candidates that will also be available on the Secretary of State's website. May 21st is, of course, Election Day. All ballots must be postmarked by this day, or if you'll be dropping your ballot off in person, be sure to do so before 8 p.m. For more information or to register to vote, you can head to the Secretary of State's website. That's a look at your morning headlines. For NBC5 News, I'm Marcus Veal. Happy Thursday.
Two Dogs Fabricating knows trailers. They sell trailers and repair trailers. So if you'd like your trailer inspected, bring it to the dogs and they'll sniff it out. Two Dogs will check the axles, hitch, tongue, lights, bed, brakes, and more to make sure your trailer's roadworthy. Most trailers on the road are fine, but it's good to have it checked out once a year. They'll scrutinize crucial welds for corrosion and cracks too. And if you need any repairs, you'll get a quick, reasonable estimate. Two Dogs Fabricating on Bryan Way, off Sage in Medford.
So, I've been thinking about how nimble and responsive Fontana Roofing is.
And?
Humor me. Close your eyes.
Okay.
Picture, if you will, an unassuming but charming home pending for sale. Suddenly, the tenuous boundary between buyer and seller is a paper-thin, worn membrane of composite material. Beyond lies a harmonious transaction in ruin. Ladies and gentlemen, you make a tenuous phone call and enter the wondrous dimension of customer satisfaction. Next stop, the re-roof zone.
The re-roof zone? Why don't we just say that Fontana Roofing, thanks to their long employee retention, have experienced teams of expert, efficient roofers that are often able to react to our customers' unique situations and turn their jobs around fast without sacrificing quality.
Okay, but I kind of wanted to work in how we have the ability to bend the fabric of space and time.
Let's just let our customers assume that.
Fair enough.
If time is of the essence, visit MontanaRoofingServices.com.
106.3 KMED, 99.3 KCMD. This is the Bill Myers Show.
Been 4 years since the big COVID lockdowns and the big takeover of just about everything via COVID, or at least under the guise of COVID response here. And I wanted to talk with Phil Kirpin. Phil Kirpin's president of American Commitment, AmericanCommitment.org. A brand new paper, which is out, which has actually looked at government response there. Phil, welcome back to the show. Great to have you on. Good morning.
Hey, Bill. My pleasure.
All right. Now, so it's American Commitment. It's not like commitment as in we're committing you to the mental health facility, right? Or is that what comes next?
I don't know. Some days I think that's where we might end up with all of the banging our heads against the wall and things like that. But no, it's named for our commitment to America's founding principles of constitutional limited government and pro-growth economic policy.
Ended up by doing a paper. A paper recently came out that you are. Did you actually commission this study as to what happened when the feds and the states locked down, or what's the story here?
I'm one of the, we sort of convened a panel, and this is through sort of another group that I also work with called Committee to Unleash Prosperity, actually convened this and published it. And what we did is we got kind of some of the absolute world-class experts on these COVID issues together. And we wrote this paper sort of collaboratively, and it's there are four names on it. It's a good ego stroke for me, because there are four names on there, and I'm one of them, and the other three are like really big time heavy hitters. It's Dr. Scott Atlas, who of course was one of the top advisors to Trump from the Hoover Institution at Stanford. Casey Mulligan, the great economist from the University of Chicago, who was on the National Economic Council. Or the Council of Economic Advisors. I always get the two confused, but he was one of the White House economists under Trump. And then Steve Hanke from Johns Hopkins University. So I had these three sort of like big time heavy hitters. And then I was kind of like the errand boy who put all their great stuff together. And I got my name on there too.
So it appears that, and the title of this paper is this study, Almost Every Government Intervention in Response to COVID Was Wrong. And it's not surprising to me, but it's kind of shocking, given that I don't think anything has really changed since those dark times 4 years ago. Would you agree or not when it comes to the power grab of the administrative state?
Well, that's why we thought it was so important to write this paper, because as much as we've got it sort of organized into 10 lessons learned, and maybe we should have called them something else, like 10 lessons we need to learn, because we learned them, but I'm not sure that a lot of our public health officials and so-called experts and politicians have learned them. And in fact, there is a crazy zero COVID activist who has a column in the left-wing UK newspaper, The Guardian. Her name is Devi Sridhar. And she actually had an article just the other day where she said, I and other experts briefed President Biden at the request of Anthony Blinken. And we told him how next time we need to lock down harder and faster and suppress to the maximum extent. And I'm like, well, if that's what he's hearing, we've got a huge problem. Because if you actually look at the evidence, that is the 180-degree opposite of the lesson we should learn.
What was the lesson that has been learned? Like I said, I have the paper, and I'm certainly going to share this, but could you give us a one or two or three or so of the 10 lessons learned here, and how it seems to cut against the grain, if you don't mind, please?
Yeah, definitely. Number one, and I think this is the most important one, that's why we put it number one. When people are panicked, when there's fear, the right thing for leaders to do is to calm that fear, not to stoke it further. And we got this 100,000,000% wrong. In fact, Dr. Atlas said that Fauci would walk into the White House task force meetings and say, people aren't scared enough. We need to scare them more, which is the opposite of what every pre-pandemic planning guidance said. They said, look, when you add panic and fear on top of a pandemic, you make everything worse. And that's exactly what we did. And in fact, if you kind of look at the overall numbers, the non-COVID excess deaths, which is, say, the excess deaths from panic and lockdown and, the man-made pandemic that we put on top of the viral pandemic, they're running at about 100,000 people per year, and they're still going. So it's about 400,000 excess, extra, above normal non-COVID deaths as a result of that sort of panic, lockdown, fear reaction. So that's got to be the number one lesson learned is our leaders, they've got to calm things down when people are panicked, not stoke it further. And they did the worst possible thing in terms of, all of the fear mongering.
Phil, in the lessons learned, did we learn anything about the rollout of the so-called vaccine? Because, I know that even President Trump on the campaign trail is continuing to crow about it, but there's more research in reality that paints a slightly more tarnished picture of how we ended up doing that. Is there anything in the report about that?
Yeah, Bill, that's one of our 10 sections, and that was the hardest one to write because that was the one where my experts had the most internal disagreement.
Yeah.
And we went through a lot of revisions and so forth. So that's definitely the most contentious, even kind of among conservatives in terms of what happened. And here's where we basically came down. Deregulating the development process, rushing it through, getting it done quickly, we think that was a good thing because there were a lot of high-risk people that the risk-benefit was favorable for them. And as long as it was voluntary, having that choice, we think that was a good thing. Where it really went off the rail and became a very destructive thing was that there was not honest communication about the fact that, hey, this was rushed through, it didn't go through all of the normal testing, it's experimental, if you're not, probably not worth it. There was not honest communication and discussion about what was tested and what was known. And then, of course, that was made a million times worse when Biden came in and started issuing mandates and forcing people to get an experimental treatment. So our view is that deregulating and getting new treatments and vaccines developed quickly is a good thing, but you got to be scrupulously honest about what is known and not known, and we failed very badly on that.
And then what about our response when it came to control of the narrative, in which for the first time in my life, government seemed to openly weaponize the agencies to crack down on anybody that said, hey, wait a minute, you're talking about the science. This science over here says something 180 degrees apart from what you're saying, you know, in your science, you know, with the Fauci science, so to speak, you know, that kind of thing. Anything?
Yeah, so critical. And we've got a whole section on the censorship and suppression of dissent and what a disaster that was. And, you know, the people who were censored and suppressed were mostly right. And the people who were, you know, giving the received wisdom that everyone was supposed to believe were mostly wrong. And so I think it was a really instructive example of how dangerous it is to have government and other gatekeepers, the heads of journals and the media and so forth, deciding what the boundaries of science are and censoring people and policing what can be said and not said. We short-circuited the normal give and take of science and the normal give and take of sort of, you know, the marketplace of ideas. And, you know, the outcome was terrible. We had a lot more lockdowns. We had a lot more school closures. All the other mistakes that we have in the report were amplified and enabled by the censorship that went on. And so that is a major lesson. Also, the idea that guys at NIH and NIAID, like Collins and Fauci, the guys who give out billions and billions and billions of dollars of research grants, the idea that they should be like the policy figures who are deciding on these accepted narratives and are out on TV all the time, it's a massive, insane conflict of interest. Because what expert is going to disagree with the guys who control all the grant money?
No one.
So that's another huge problem.
Yeah. No one that depended on Fauci for money was going to say boo against Fauci. That's just the bottom line, because it's against your own interests.
And everyone does. I mean, you look at the NIH grant money. You look at the NIH grant money to the major academic centers that were driving so much of this narrative. You know, Johns Hopkins is getting $800 million a year in NIH grant money, and you know, UCSF is getting, you know, $750 million, whatever it is. I mean, you could pull that list up. It's these staggering sums of money. So, I mean, they're going to be on the team. You know, there's not much question about that.
Yeah. All right. Now, the big question here, have we learned our lesson, these 10 lessons that you're putting out there? And I'm going to share this so everybody else can read it too, Phil. Has the system learned its lesson, and have the powers that be returned their power to the people yet?
I would say the one thing that even the liberals sort of learned their lesson and admitted they made a mistake was the school closures, which is good, because that was the dumbest of all the dumb mistakes and the most destructive long term.
Yeah.
And even the New York Times now has done a bunch of reports about, you know, what a mistake that was. Although they don't ever say that they were one of the prime culprits that caused it or apologize for that.
Yeah.
But they have admitted that that was a mistake. So that one I do think we mostly have, although, I mean, I don't know if you saw Dr. Phil went on The View the other day, and he said what a mistake school closures were, and they all, like, yelled at him. So I'm not sure everyone has fully got it, but I think we've mostly won on that one. Boy, on the other ones, I don't know. I really don't know, and especially in the more liberal areas. And, I mean, I'm in Washington, D.C. You're in sort of the heart of West Coast lunacy out there. I mean, I think, you know, next time we have a bad respiratory season, they're going to try to do all this stuff again in the most liberal areas. So I'm really worried about that. It's one of the reasons we've got to get the facts and the information about what really happened out to people and get them at their fingertips so we can fight this stuff when they do try to bring it back.
That is what has concerned me, especially this being a presidential election year here, Phil, is that COVID lessons learned. The one thing I think that that Democrats largely learned is that if you can take something like that, everything COVID did was weaponized into changing all the rules, upending all the protections to have fair and honest and accountable elections going on. It's like, and they changed it all because of the COVID issue. And now you hear all this talk about disease X, how we should respond to the next disease X, and Do you have a little concern in the back of your brain here when you hear that kind of talk out in the system?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think one of the reasons we've really got to make sure that the real facts of what happened get out is that I think you're right that the people who exploited this for more power, more political power, more money, I mean, the big tech companies in particular, who were driving so much of the panic, you know, they went from trillion-dollar companies to $2 trillion companies because everything moved online. So, I mean, we need to be very cautious that the worst of the pandemic actors maybe learned the wrong lesson, which is they can get away with it and, you know, enhance their power and their wealth by doing this kind of thing. And I'm really worried, actually, that we're going to see the same play again and maybe even worse. And we've got this World Health Organization pandemic quote-unquote agreement. They won't say the word treaty because then it would need Senate ratification. That's coming up shortly, and that's going to have sort of a pre-planned, pre-packaged go along with whatever the crazy global authoritarian response is whenever they decide to declare that there's a pandemic. We had the, you know, Trump tried to withdraw from the World Health Organization. Biden put us back in. We've got, you know, the House tried to stop our funding of that organization. The Senate put the funding back in, and that ended up, you know, they caved. They agreed to it. It was funded in the final bill that was passed just recently here. And so we're paying for the crazy organization where all these ideas are coming from. They've not learned their lessons. And so, you know, there's a reason we're still talking about COVID, still doing papers like this. It's because none of these fights are over. But we do have much better arguments than they do on the merits, on the facts of what happened.
Mm-hmm. And I highly recommend this
report.
And I highly recommend that that you take this report and spread it around, folks. COVID Lessons Learned, a retrospective after 4 years. And it's by Scott Atlas, Steve Hanke. Do you pronounce his name Hanke? Is that how you pronounce his name?
Yeah.
Okay,
yep.
Yeah. And of course, you, Phil Kirpin, and Casey Mulligan. And I will link to that. And, of course, Phil is with American Commitment, AmericanCommitment.org, and the paper itself is actually on Committee to Unleash Prosperity, and I will put that up on my show blog today to make it easy for people to find it, download the report, and read it, and hopefully share that on. And I'm hoping that we learn our lessons and we learn them quickly, because I can't help but think that deep state, and the shallow state for that matter, is gearing up to do it again if they ever have the opportunity. Phil, I'll give you the final word. Thanks.
Yeah, I'm really worried. The deep state issue is a big one. Biden just issued new Office of Personnel Management rules today that are designed to prevent the next president from firing federal bureaucrats. And, you know, Trump got a lot of this right, but he had no control over his own agencies. And so Trump would come out and have a CDC director with him and say all the schools should be open. Then you'd go on CDC.gov and it would say all the schools should be closed.
So,
you know, one of the big challenges we have is wrestling the bureaucrats and getting control of the bureaucracy. So we don't just need our political people to get this stuff right, but we need them to actually get control of the government agencies and drive it down. And that's, I think, part of the big challenge we've got ahead of us.
Agreed. That's the fight that's never ending right now. We have the same problem when it comes to fighting state agency power in the state of Oregon. It's kind of like a mini version of the battle that Trump has dealt with here for a number of years back when he was president, too. And hopefully he'll be dealing with it again. And hopefully more successful this time around if he is able to vanquish it this time, okay? Phil, thanks for the call. Appreciate you being on. And thanks for checking in on the road, okay? You be well.
All right. Have a good one.